G'day mate, how you going? This is The Mullet, here with episode number 155. Yep, 155 episodes in, folks. We're going to give you something that you've been asking for a while. I've had many listeners say, "Hey Adam, can you please give us Top Gun?" Well, you're getting it tonight, folks. Yep, it's a huge favourite of mine. Top Gun's up there with Star Wars in terms of how much of an influence this film is on me. So let's get into it, folks.
All wings report in.
This is Mullet. I'm coming down on, looks like, a bogey. Here he is. He's on the corner here of this little cloud.
What position is that, Mullet? Can you say that again?
Bogey's at 2 o'clock. She's around the corner.
Mullet, let Viper take him out and get Merlin to come around on the other side at 2, Vector 9.
Yeah, no, it's 1 past 2 now. That's 1,401 second there, folks.
We talk on radar here, sir.
Home base, this is on radio. Not radar. Two separate forms of technology, mate.
Mullet, stay on your bogey. Stay on your bogey.
Yeah, mate. Never left it. All right, folks, yes, we're getting into the episode very quickly here, but I've got to say, my first thoughts of Top Gun go back to 1988 in Australia. The World Expo had taken place, and, going through the different pavilions, the New Zealand one was fantastic and was probably the biggest. Really atmospheric, it was huge. Then I went to the Swiss pavilion. And then the Thailand one, of course, the Canadian one was fantastic as well. So, very big time for us here at Brisbane in Australia, 1988. Top Gun was just about to be released on television. And I had not seen it at the movies. It's one that slipped past us. And, you know, it wasn't something that my parents would want us not to see or anything like that at the time. Their formative age had been about, I think it was about 8 years old at the time. But when I saw, you know, the trailers and stuff like that for the TV release of Top Gun, my mind was just blasting away going, wow, look at those Tomcats, look at these amazing pilots, you know, and real wizards with planes. I mean, the stuff they're pulling off, truly amazing. And the fact that, you know, it's based on reality to a certain extent, you know. And, you know, the fact that these pilots are able to take a fairly big plane. I mean, the F-14 is not a small plane. And do what they're doing is truly mind-boggling. We obviously have Top Gun Maverick on the way this year, which I cannot wait for. It's a sequel that should have come 10, maybe even 20 years ago. Because without a doubt, the character of Pete Mitchell is one that really resonated with me. You know, it's a pilot's going through, you know, a lot, and, you know, so much responsibility put on his shoulders, but at the same time, living up to his family image. You know, it's a timeless character, and it's one of, if not the best, Tom Cruise character ever. The writing on this was just really good. So we're going to get into this, folks. Here it is, Lethal Mullet, episode number 155 for you, the listener, that asked for it, Top Gun.
All right, lights, camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going? G'day mate, how you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host Mark Newbold into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy day, you know? Oh, wow.
Right, I'm
yeah.
Like,
hey. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage. And enjoy the show, you know, films and all that sort of stuff. You know?
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
All right, folks, here we are in the pub chatting Top Gun tonight. What a film. It's up there with Star Wars and Mad Max. I'm gobsmacked. You know, I can't even get the words out, folks. The mic isn't even getting the words of exasperation, excitement, everything that I'm saying here. Because, you know, it really is one of the great films of the 80s. And, you know, we sit here post-dinner, folks. We've just had a dinner with a couple of good mates. And we actually brought up Top Gun Maverick, which we're very excited about, this new film. You know, and what a time. You know, Tom Cruise has always fired on all cylinders. Some great movies over the years and everything from the John Grisham stuff he did to, obviously, you know, Cocktail to Days of Thunder with, of course, the director himself, the late, great Tony Scott, folks. The great Tony Scott. True Romance. The Last Boy Scout. Days of Thunder. Man on Fire and Deja Vu with, of course, the amazing Denzel Washington. This is a director with a vision. I mean, this is probably his quintessential film. I mean, along with producer Jerry Bruckheimer, they really punched out an amazing film. And, of course, Tom Cruise went all in this one. And we're going to chat about all that. But, of course, Top Gun Maverick is a sequel that really should have been done in the 90s. As far as I'm concerned, folks, it is strong story, this the Pete Mitchell. You know, we really sided with Pete Mitchell in this, you know, folks. Obviously, he's a rebellious character, one that thinks on his gut, not on his mind. You know, he's really somebody on the spur of the moment, follows things. And, you know, it has hazardous consequences for Goose, which is obviously going to play into the next movie with Goose's son. Going to be one of the cornerstones of what the next story is about. And of course, the fact that Mitchell really hasn't changed too much. He is still the same person, willing to take chances and really think of the seat of his pants, really do exactly what he's going to do as a pilot. And he does it well. Obviously, he's one of the greatest pilots out there. Tom Cruise really, you know, ate up the role. You can watch many of the behind-the-scenes features, which I currently have in my hot little hands, the special collector's edition, which came out in about 2009, folks. And it's got some great stuff. It's got commentary by Jerry Bruckheimer, Tony Scott, Jack Epps Jr., and the naval experts on the film itself. Danger Zone, the making of the Top Gun 6-part documentary. Multi-angle storyboards with optional commentary by director Tony Scott. Best of the best inside the real Top Gun, the Naval Center, of course, in San Diego, where all this magic happens. You have the Vintage Gallery, 4 music videos of Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone, Berlin's Take My Breath Away, Lover Boy, Heaven in Your Eyes, and Harry Faltermeyer as Steve Stevens' Top Gun Anthem. Now, if you're a guitarist like myself, that is absolutely classic. You know, it's very simple. When you get down to it, the actual music is absolutely gobsmackingly beautiful. I love it. Always have. And it's timeless, folks. A lot of this rock and roll soundtracks of the 80s, you know, they're great, but not as timeless as this one. This is one of the top-selling soundtracks of all time when it comes to the music. It is fantastic. We've got TV spots with a behind-the-scenes featurette, survival training featurette, and, of course, Tom Cruise interviews. Now, if you haven't watched this on a projector, folks, get a projector.
They're going cheap now. Big W and Kmart here in Australia going really well with, of course, the projectors, which you can buy from anywhere from $100 to $200. And you put up, set it up like a drive-in at your home. Folks, put it outside. You know, it's Australia's like, it's so hot, you sit outside and get into it. Put the projector on, crank your headphones, put in the headphones. You can blow your eardrums out with, of course, the sounds of Top Gun, or in your own backyard, and have it like a drive-through, folks. Drive-in. You know, drive-in cinema. Cinema experience is fantastic. Oh, I'm lost of words, folks. We're really going to get into this film right now.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yes! The mullet is here! Enjoy! Alright, let's go, let's go. Yep, 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 yep. Alright, folks, we're going to chat about now the cast of this great film. We're going as sporadic as we can today, folks. No plan, because this is how much I want to chat about this film. You know, I could sit here and plan a show for you, but, you know, the heart is in this, you know, and the heart moves erratically, folks. It really is. You know, when you're pulled by the heartstrings, when you're in love, you know what it's like. And, you know, I'm going through that in my own life right now. So we're going to go through that with my love for this film. All right. So let's chat about the cast. Starting with Tom Cruise playing Lieutenant Pete Mitchell. Obviously, his call sign is Maverick. He's the lead in this, of course. One of his biggest films at the time, and certainly was, you know, rising in success. And this is, without a doubt, one of those movies which is a real calling card. You know, when you mention Tom Cruise, you think Top Gun. Yes, folks. Apart from other things, obviously, he's known for Top Gun's, without a doubt, one of the greats. And, you know, he really is someone that doesn't matter which movie is, not just Top Gun, the other movies that he's done all the way through, he never half-asses it. He always puts 150% into everything he does, even 200%. The energy of this man is all to be seen on screen. Pete Mitchell, obviously, is someone that's, you know, he's got a family which has a name in the Navy already. His father was bit of a wild man when it came to being an aviator as well back in the Vietnam War. And with that, he's got legacy, you know, and obviously he's trying to prove himself with that too. Doesn't know how to quite do it and do it responsibly, which is something that is the cornerstone of this story and, of course, the ramifications and effect that it has, not just himself, but others that he cares for and stuff like that too. Val Kilmer plays, of course, Iceman in this. Call sign for the coolest character there is. You know, if there's a bad guy in this movie, to a certain extent, with the training in, of course, the aviator school they go to, which is, of course, nicknamed Top Gun in Miramar, San Diego, California, U.S. Navy barracks there. What is interesting about it is that Iceman is pretty much the cool man on campus. He's the top dog, without a doubt, one of the big ones when it comes to it, you know. And of course, you know, very much the cornerstone of, you know, when it comes to Maverick getting his way, obviously. Kelly McGillis, obviously playing the love interest, but also very pivotal character when it comes to knowing the feel of being a naval aviator and then, of course, running things by the book when it comes to the way, you know, it should be done by schematic, by plan, whatever it is, military discipline, whatever it is. She sort of brings that element into the story, and she's fantastic for it. Obviously, Anthony Edwards playing, of course, Goose in this. Fantastic actor. Always has been interesting on screen, TV, whatever he's done over the years. Goose is, without a doubt, his biggest role, and fantastic role in it, too. And he sports a hell of a moustache for this, may I say. Meg Ryan playing, of course, Carol Bradshaw, of course, the partner to, of course, Goose. And this is one of the first performances I remember of Meg Ryan in the movies. She's fantastic in this. She does a really like bang-on performance. And she's a lot of fun with it too. Obviously, Viper, played by Tom Skerritt, is one of the bigger names in it too. Obviously, very well known at the time for his time in Alien, which I've probably known him the most for. Always remembered as that senior guy with the moustache that was always cool, cool as ice. The older man's version of Iceman, he's really on top of it too. Tim Robbins, obviously in it too, playing, of course, Merlin.
He's got to, you know, start where he's obviously part of the people that are out there trying to get things happening as it comes to the opening sequences too. He's one of the radar techs on the ships, which we'll talk about soon. Tim's great because we get to see him later after Goose passes. Oh, shock horror. There's a spoiler, folks. But I'm sure you've seen Top Gun before we get into this, you know, episode. But what's great about it is Tim really plays it well without hamming anything up when it comes to comedy and stuff, which is a natural talent of his. You know, he can really play that. We've chatted about that before. We haven't done the movie yet, which I'm going to do one day soon, which is Eric the Viking. One of my favorite comedies from the 1980s, and I remember renting that a number of times, and luckily I've got the DVD copy of that too. Rick Rossovich plays, of course, the wingman to, of course, Iceman. He plays Slider, and Rick Rossovich you'll know for a number of the films that came out in the 80s, and particularly late 80s, but we obviously he's in Terminator, big part in that. And also, of course, the Michael Biehn-led movie with Charlie Sheen, of course. A number of other actors in it too. Bill Paxton. That was, of course, 1989's Navy SEALs, which is a great film. Probably not the most when it comes to critically acclaimed films, but it's certainly one that has a lot of great corny, cheesy lines from the 80s, but also just some great stars in it too. And Titus Welliver is actually in that in one of his first performances too. One of my favourite actors out there, Titus Welliver, you are the man when it comes to that stuff too. All right, we also have James Tolkien, of course, and he plays, of course, Stinger, which is the commander of the USS Enterprise, and obviously he's got a number of choice scenes at the start and the end of the film where we see Pete Mitchell return to, of course, USS Enterprise when they've got to get in against the MiGs. Which are actually F5 Tiger Sharks, folks, which we'll talk about too very soon. Wolfman, played by Barry Tubb. We've also got Clarence Gilliard playing Sundown. Adrian Pasdar as Chipper. Yes, folks, that's right. Adrian Pasdar from Heroes. Great actor. Whip Hubley plays Lieutenant Rick in that. John Stockwell. That's right, from My Science Project. John Stockwell, known as director these days as well as an actor, plays Cougar at the start, the man that drops and basically drops his marbles, folks. Loses it out there too. Who else do we have there, folks? We have a couple other actors here and there too, which we'll talk about a little bit closer to. It's a great cast, folks. Now, this is a film which I think really uses the ensemble well and has to, because you're in a kind of a school environment with this naval training facility, which we get into, called Top Gun. Now, before this film had come along, I'm sure Top Gun was not on a lot of people's lips and ears when it comes to what this thing is. So what is Top Gun? Before we get into the movie, we should really look at what that is. All right, so what is Top Gun? It is the United States Navy Strike Fighter Tactics Instructor Program. All right, so it's literally where people that are the best pilots in the United States Navy come together and learn better skills as well. So it's a number of different centers put together. It's the Naval Air Station in Miramar, San Diego, California. So going back to the 1960s, in 1968, the Chief of Naval Operations, a man by the name of Admiral Thomas Hinman Mora, basically had the idea to look at what it was that was failing in combat for jet fighter pilots, anyone that was involved in high-end dogfighting skills, etc. Things that when it comes to air-to-air combat, all that sort of stuff. So obviously back in North Vietnam, they had things like Operation Rolling Thunder, a number of things like that in the mid to late 60s, which were really pushing aerial combat to its its knees. And at the time, obviously, the US were using fighter planes like the McDonnell Douglas F-4 Phantom II. Very iconic-looking plane, may I say, folks. That is one that's being used in Australia, the US, and all abroad, and still to this day is being used by some air forces in the world. Certainly has a very unique look. And you get to see that in some, I think it's either photo or vice versa, of Pete Mitchell's father, who was a naval aviator in, of course, Vietnam and this too. So with that too, these are heavily armed jets at the time, which had everything with obviously all the pod armaments that they can put on the wings, which are things obviously like everything from air-to-air missiles, sidewinders, all that sort of stuff, gun pods. And of course they had, particularly on that one, they had the M61 Vulcan cannon. And of course that was a huge development, which to this day is still, and it went through number other planes and jets, obviously, to the F-14 used something very similar as well. And, you know, it was something that was definitely, brought in along with the weapons like the AIM-9 Sidewinder and the AIM-7 Sparrow, which is an air-to-air missile as well, too. But the idea was to obviously come up with what they call a fighter weapons school. So it was established in 1969 at the Naval Air Station in Miramar. And basically the idea is that people go and attend this, officers in the Navy that are fighter pilots. And you go basically up against the best of the best in there. But also you're learning skills from very experienced lecturers that were exactly that, top pilots in their day as well. And, you know, it's interesting too. It's since about 1973, the purpose of the actual school is to train fighter air crews at the graduate level in all aspects of fighter weapons systems, including tactics, techniques, procedures, and doctrine, which you can find. This is all information you can find on the Wikipedia page, folks. Of just look up Top Gun. So some great reading there, folks. Tells you about exactly what Top Gun's all about. And obviously we get a real taste of that in this film, and hopefully we'll see that too in the upcoming film Maverick as well. So obviously in the film we get to see basically a decade and a bit after its formation, which is basically the late 60s, 1969, 1970, where it really kicked off. And so at this stage, 16 or 17 years later, we have this story set in the same schools where basically we're seeing the best of the best. And again, it's more like a sports film by doing that too. But of course, we know that it's a very, very real situation and a very, very real school to bring out the best fighter pilots the Navy has to offer in the United States.
Oh, yes, hello. We have some news for you out there in the world of the mullet. Yes, we are going to be bringing you a wonderful brand new podcast here on this very, very channel. And here is the mullet, here to tell you all about it.
All right, so to break up the news a little bit here, what is happening, folks, is Dan Hadley and I have been chatting on and off for a little while about doing some fun project together that we can chat about our love of Douglas Adams and, of course, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and, of course, Shatter. That's right, Doctor Who that he did. Did a couple episodes of Doctor Who, folks, well known as, of course, Shatter, that never got quite finished, folks. That's right, with Tom Baker. But we're going to be chatting more about, don't panic, and make sure that you bring your towel because the Vogons are coming. That's right, we're going to be chatting about the one, the only, the trilogy in four parts, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and everything in between. The universe, then everything, and of course, 42, the answer to the biggest question out there, 42. Everything, all on a brand new podcast coming very, very soon. It's coming out monthly, and it really will be free form. There will be no scripts, no nothing. We'll be sitting down and, of course, chatting with the man that runs Type 40 Doctor Who podcast, and of course the one that is none other, known as Spacebook on Facebook, Dan Hadley and myself. It's going to be a co-production of Spacebook and, of course, The Lethal Mullet.
Oh, it sounds so scrumptious and so mullety, mullety goodness. Oh, we should just call it The Mullet Book.
All right, folks, we had to let you know about the Hitchhiker's show that's coming. It'll have its own name and everything very, very soon. But before we get any further, we need to get back into this 1986 classic action drama film, and all around, it's a quintessential 80s flick, folks. Let's get into it. So, the film has a pretty simple premise, all right? Very, very simple premise. And I think that's why it does so well. Consider it's kind of like a fight film in some ways, you know? It's or like a race film, racing cars and stuff like that, but this time with jets, and that's what makes it quite an interesting way of doing things, you know? So, let's get into the main plot here. Okay, so Pete Maverick Mitchell, obviously, is a United States naval aviator, is the term, but basically jet pilot. One of those jet pilots of the F-4 Phantom Tomcat, one of the greatest, most amazing jets ever produced. It was something that was very common to see from the late 70s all through to the early 90s to the mid-90s. And, of course, we saw them in Desert Storm. So, you know, quite a popular plane. And you will remember seeing those for the first time on the screen in a movie with Mr. Kirk Douglas and, of course, Martin Sheen. And that is, of course, The Final Countdown, which is quite an interesting time travel film if you haven't seen it, folks. That is a science fiction military film where a modern aircraft carrier with F-14s goes back to when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor in World War II. So you can imagine Tomcats going after Zeros, Japanese Zero planes. Pretty amazing stuff. It'd be like seeing Martians for the first time. Anyway, but Maverick and, of course, his radar intercept officer played, and this obviously by Anthony Edwards, is Lieutenant by the name of Nick Bradshaw. Nickname is Goose. Now, I do believe, and this is something that, you know, I'll always stick with, is the writers may have watched Mad Max. Because, of course, what's Mad Max co-pilot and best pal's names, of course? Goose. And what happens to Goose in it? Same thing that happens in this movie, folks. That's right. Goose doesn't survive. So, during an interception with a MiG-28, now, as we mentioned earlier, these are played in the film by American planes, by F-5 Tiger Sharks, which are an amazing plane all themselves, too. Great dogfighting plane. And at this stage, they go basically going head-to-head with Cougar and Merlin as well in another F-14 Tomcat, obviously with Maverick and Goose. They come and find this MiG-28, and what they find is that Cougar has completely lost his marbles and is basically doesn't have the edge that it takes to take on these fighters. So they manage to scare off the MiG-28s together as a team. But after that, Merlin realizes that Merlin's his radar officers. It's Cougar and Merlin in their own plane. And he's not going to be able to land on the carrier deck. So in this, basically, Maverick shows what it means to be a true leader and goes above and beyond orders of what the captain of the ship says and basically takes it on himself to try and get his man back, safely land the plane. And they do. And again, it's because he's somebody who can think on the seat of his pants. When they return to the deck, they have a chat with the captain and the CAG, as they call him. And his name is Stinger. Now, you'll know him, of course, as we mentioned, the cast before from, of course, Back to the Future. It's played by, of course, the same actor that does the work of Principal Skinner. And he basically he realizes a cougar is not going to be able to go to Miramar, where he needs to send a pilot and radar officer, because at the end of the day, he needs to send the best to take on the best at Miramar, otherwise known as, of course, Top Gun. Now, what's interesting about this is that, you know, Cougar throws in his wings, so he's basically finished his career in the aviation department of the Navy. But at this stage, then it is, of course, it's sending Maverick and Goose. Last thing that, of course, Stinger wants to do, send him to the Naval Air Station at Miramar, but they do. So this, of course, starts the second part of the story after seeing, you know, real combat, or in this case, real dogfighting with the MiG-28s. This sees, obviously, Maverick and Goose heading towards Miramar, and we see basically the school itself, which is basically a huge naval aviator's base. So this is one based at San Diego, as we mentioned earlier, the real base itself. And this is basically where Top Gun starts. The true story of Top Gun itself is in what the pilots go through. So as they get there, Goose and Maverick meet a woman at a bar. Her name is Charlotte Blackwood, and nickname is Charlie, or call sign is Charlie. And she's a civilian, so she's not an actual military officer or anything like that, but she holds a very similar rank to that of, you know, a captain or vice versa. So she is a military leader in a sense. So the first bones of contention that she has with Maverick, Charlie basically, you know, in the military meetings that they have, doesn't believe his aerial acrobatics. Basically, the fact that, you know, that he can flip a plane and as he says, goes inverted and gives the MiG-28 pilot the bird, as we say in Australia, the finger. But, of course, she's enamored with just the bravado and, of course, the ego on this pilot and doesn't know what to believe. Of course, Iceman and many others have a different coin of phrase when they do that as well. So Maverick gets his first run of training, and as he goes, he basically goes on his first run and defeats Rick Heatherly, Lieutenant Commander Jester. But because they broke one of the biggest rules, which is flying under a certain amount of meters, so basically going so low that they broke the rule of engagement. Now, rules of engagement, like any other sport, or in this case the flying, is, of course, by simply keeping things safe, particularly for the pilots and, you know, a lot of the low-flying craft. Talk about the Tomcat goes at such an amazing speed, and particularly when they're doing these dogfights. You know, you couldn't expect them to go that fast. So from here, basically, Commander Mike Metcalf, better known, of course, as Viper, and this time Skerritt, he gets completely reprimanded for it, of course, as they completely went against the rules of the, even though they still got Jester. Jester also then chats to, of course, Viper. He says that, you know, he had actually admired the kid. And, of course, particularly the skills. But one of the biggest things in the military, not just in the Navy, aviation areas, but anywhere, is that you need to be able to trust your wingman, trust your fellow soldier, vice versa, sailor, whatever it is, what, depending on what department you're in. So from here, obviously, the rivalry starts between Maverick and, of course, Iceman. Tom Kazanski, and, of course, played by the amazing, and may I say, just, you know, a real artist when it comes to roles, and Val Kilmer. Even to this day, with, you know, he's not a well man. The poor guy has been through, obviously, cancer and a number of other things, and we wish him all the best. He's still out there, still doing an amazing job, and he's also done a recent documentary, folks. If you haven't checked it out, it's fantastic. Just look it up on, I think it was on Netflix and Amazon Prime, and it's all about, of course, Val himself and what he's been up to, and a lot of the home movies that he's made behind the scenes on many films. So, obviously, Iceman believes that he's too dangerous to have around, particularly as part of a team. So, as they go through the classes as well as the training, Charlie completely objects to how Maverick's, you know, so aggressive in the air, how he's, you know, basically puts not only himself out there, but all of his teammates at risk the way that he goes after a win. But outside of the class, they start to develop a relationship. And, of course, with that relationship getting developed, we get some big music, which is part of the soundtrack. We'll chat about that soon too, folks. So each of these hops, or as they call it, these exercises, they're going up against different people. So Maverick completely leaves his wingman, who's the name of Hollywood, to go after Viper. And Viper is completely, obviously, probably the best of all the instructors and the best dogfighter there is, and even knew Maverick's father. But as this, he's actually smarter and wiser, obviously, than Maverick too. And from here, he maneuvers it in such a way that Jester can actually shoot down Maverick from behind. And, of course, it shows not just getting the ego of trying to take out a hit, but working as a team, which is what they're trying to really teach them here, is, you know, it's not just about yourself taking the kill and all that. It's also about the teamwork involved in it. See, it's just like a sport too.
What's interesting is that Jester actually brings out the fact that, you know, he should be,
you know, very proud of his skills and that he's an excellent pilot, but never, ever leave your wingman alone by themselves. This, of course, leaves the next hop, the two leads, Maverick and Iceman, head-to-head as they go, and, of course, they've got to chase an A4 in this one and the engagement, of course. This is one of the trickier ones and certainly is one that is remembered. This, of course, is where we see a something happen with both Iceman's plane and, of course, Maverick's as well. And there's a jet wash that Iceman's aircraft leaves out, and the flame out of both engines also puts Maverick's in jeopardy. So from here, Maverick and Goose gets into such a spin that they have to eject out of their aircraft. And both of them eject. Goose actually hits the canopy that doesn't fully go through. And, of course, the concussion crushes his skull and head. And, of course, with that, they land in the water and are rescued. But as they hit the water, obviously, Maverick sees no response from Goose and then finds, unfortunately, that he's passed away due to, of course, hitting the actual canopy so hard. Maverick straight away put in a board of inquiry where, of course, it's all about where is his due in as far as, like, his responsibility in keeping, of course, Goose safe. And, of course, he's completely strawed out with guilt, of course, of the death and his own piloting skills. He loses all confidence in his abilities to do things and drops out of Top Gun. And from here, it is, of course, where he seeks guidance from Viper. And basically, he talks about his own father, Duke Mitchell, when they were part of the USS Oriskany. And it was about the battle where Mitchell was killed. Now, of course, like many military engagements and stuff like that, everything's fairly confidential and top secret, of course. In this case, Viper tells him the classified information and says that Mitchell died a hero. And again, you know, the fact that, you know, be confident in the fact that your family are heroic. And without it, from here, because he's actually pulled out of the competition, he then goes back for, of course, going through graduating. And of course, the Top Gun trophy goes to Iceman. In the middle of the graduation party, of course, a bunch of orders come through for every pilot that's there to go and join, of course, their own ships because there's a crisis that's come through and they need to go and obviously, you know, suit up and get ready for the conflict. From here, obviously, all of them go back to their original ships. The USS Enterprise is one of them. And, of course, the Leighton, the SS Leighton, which is a disabled communication ship, is in Russian waters. Maverick and Merlin go together. This is, of course, Cougar's former Rio. Is the one that goes up to the F-14 with him, followed by Iceman and Hollywood as well. And, of course, from here, they're up against 6 MiGs in total. There's an interesting sign, and of course, at the end of the day, this is one of the greatest parts of the actual film itself. We get to see the F-5s and the F-14s up against each other. It's well shot. It's obviously done by professionals. There's, you know, these guys are the real deal, the people actually flying these planes and stuff like that. But also the fact that afterwards, Iceman and Maverick have an absolute respect for each other, which I think is going to go into the next film. So this film was inspired heavily by a book by the name of Top Guns by Ehud Yoni. And Ehud Yoni had basically done this article in May 1983 of the California Magazine, which had aerial photography from Heater, who's a Lieutenant Commander Charles Heatley. And, of course, this goes through all the life of the pilots there at the Naval Station at Miramar and, of course, what they call Fighter Town. which is basically what they call the San Diego there too. Jerry Bruckheimer and, of course, Don Simpson were basically really on par when wanting to produce this. And from here, they put Jim Cash and Jacob Studd together to put the draft in. And, you know, it's interesting. You've got all this military hardware. You've got a great amount of research you can do when it comes to what Top Gun's all about. And these guys really put it together. And they picked the right director, Tony Scott. You know, had done such an amazing job in commercial work. Obviously, his own brother been involved in some of the big movies of the time.
Alien and Blade Runner. So, I mean, there was obviously a lot there, but it was the strength of his commercial work alone that got him there too. Matthew Modine was originally going to be cast in the role of Pete Mitchell. Eventually went to, of course, Tom Cruise. And it would have been an interesting one to see Matthew Modine in 86, before he'd done Full Metal Jacket, do something along these lines. So he certainly could do it, without a doubt. I think, you know, it would have been interesting. Yeah, what's interesting too is that, you know, we've got all these amazing roles that are out there. Which is interesting in this film is, of course, like many military-style films, you know, it's always good to have the assistance of that said military might. Of course, in this case, it's obviously the US Navy is what the story is all about. So the producers wanted the assistance of that, and of course the Navy was a big part into making it realistic, obviously, too, but also protecting the brand in the way that, you know, again, being as real as it possibly can. One of the great things about this is just changes here and there, things like the opening dogfight being moved to international waters instead of being near Cuba, things like that. A lot of the language being corrected towards what really would happen in military as well. And things involving crashes and stuff like that. What would really happen in the military? So there's a lot of those little bits and pieces here and there too, which make it a lot more interesting. So they had people involved in the film itself, which were you know, very high up when it comes to the Top Guns, successful you know, students that have turned into some of the greatest people out there when it comes to those. So things like, of course, they've got a couple of quite high mighty pilots when it comes to that too. Rear Admiral Pete Viper Pettigrew, who was a former Navy aviator. He was a Vietnam War veteran. And Top Gun instructor, was one of the technical advisors in the film. Also former Top Gun instructor and pilot, and now congressman as well, which is Randy Duke Cunningham. And he was an inspiration, or claims to be an inspiration, for Pete Mitchell in the film, which is quite interesting. So again, the Navy made a lot of aircraft fighter squadrons basically available for the movie. In this stage, they've, of course, the F-14 VF-51 Screaming Eagles is the ones that are involved in that too. And Paramount paid $7,800 US per hour for the privilege back in 85, 86 when the film was being made for those planes. To put it in today's dollars, that's $18,800 for everything from the fuel, the cost of running the plane, etc. too. And of course, a lot of the sequences with the USS Enterprise as well, the you know, those taking off the from there, of course, were a different squadron. That was the VF-114 Aardvarks and VF-213 Black Lions for those squadrons as well. And of course, it's absolutely beautifully shot. And of course, it's got an amazing soundtrack at that time too. So, folks, you know, when it comes down to it, this is one of those ones that really nails that feel. Now, music. The Top Gun soundtrack is a 9x platinum certified album. It's one of the most popular soundtracks from a film ever created. Harold Faltermeyer, who had worked on Beverly Hills Cop with Jerry Bruckheimer, of course, Don Simpson before, was said to basically brought in by the producers to say, look, we need you again on this and we need you to do your best work. And of course, it is one of the greats when it comes to guitar leads and stuff like that on top. It's just beautiful. We've also got, of course, the Oscar-winning hit Take My Breath Away, which, you know, heavily, there's more than one song here, folks, that are popular on the soundtrack. Isn't it great? Take My Breath Away. Then we also got Kenny Loggins, who did Playing With The Boys as one of his songs. And, of course, Danger Zone. So you got three big hits on the one album, folks. And it really is. It's great. So that just makes it, you know, you just look at it, just how good it is. Also, you got Great Balls of Fire by Jerry Lee Lewis. You Lost That Love and Feeling by the Righteous Brothers. And, of course, the Top Gun anthem, which is just great. And, of course, Memories. And on that one, Stevens is on that on the full one as well, too. Bryan Adams was actually considered to do some stuff on this one, but they didn't. And even Toto done that, too, which is just amazing, folks, isn't it?
Toto did, of course, David Lynch's Dune, and a great rock band even to this day. So the film came out May 12, 1986, and there was another one that came out in San Diego in May 5, which is a little bit earlier. And, of course, it went into United States and Canada in more than 1,000 cinemas on May 16, 1986. And a week prior to Memorial Weekend, it was going to be a gamble whether this film would do well or not. This film's huge, folks. I mean, it's done an amazing job of firing on all cylinders. It's certainly one of the best films like when it comes to dogfighting and stuff like that. And to be honest, I've always put it up with Iron Eagle. Iron Eagle, I've always thought of as sort of more a, you know, homegrown version of Top Gun in some ways. You know, it's a younger man's game sort of a film at the time. But having said that, I still feel that, you know, they did an amazing job in those movies. If, with a $15 million budget, they made $357.1 million back in box office alone. So the film is just going to be remembered for that alone. And, of course, it's you know, always fraught after when it comes to how good this thing is. So we've got Top Gun Maverick on the way, folks. This is going to be huge. When it comes out, we'll definitely be covering it heaps here. This is on, of course, the Hallenbeck scale. 5 out of 5, folks. You don't get better than this when it comes to aerial combat. This is a fantastic film. If you haven't seen it on the big screen, and they do some when it comes to the sequel coming up, I mean, we'll cover that with heaps, you know, and really get into that too. Ooh, there you go. There's even some people now telling me how good it is too. Here is, of course, the FPN crowd. Dan Hadley saying just how amazing this film is and still to this day. And very, very thought after overseas in the UK. Folks, I'm the Mullet. That's Top Gun. I love it. It's 5 out of 5. Go and check it out. We'll catch you next week here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. But also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the B-grade action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax. The lows of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Phantom Podcast Network's Needle Wallet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
Wow, I'm a leader.